This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raider podcast, the last podcast of the regular season of 2016. To you and your families, your friends, thanks for listening and downloading the podcast on iTunes, at Raiders.com, on Twitter, at the Raiders, and on the Raiders Facebook page. Hey, Raider Nation, how good is this? 12-3 going in to the last game of the year, a division matchup against the 8-7 Denver Broncos at Sports Authority Field coming up here on Sunday. Would you take that if I told you that in Napa when we started this journey that the Raiders would be 12-3? But unfortunately, the Raiders have gone through a difficult week as they've lost their MVP candidate and starting quarterback, Derek Carr, to the broken fibula. That was a brutal injury for Derek. Obviously, Derek's already had the surgery in Los Angeles. He tweeted it out. He told people he's okay. He's thanking everyone for praying for him, and he'll be ready to go, hopefully sooner than later. I'm not here. I don't play a doctor on this podcast or on my radio shows, but we're hoping for the best. Maybe he heals sooner than later, but this is a significant injury. He's going to be out for a long period of time, and if we get good news, you'll hear about it at Raiders.com before anywhere else. But for Derek Carr, it's just a shame that it happened that way in that win to get the 12th win of the year against the Indianapolis Colts, where he was playing so well, having such a great season with the lead, a 19-point lead. A lot of debate. Should he have been in the game? I'll go first. I think so. Andrew Luck, it was an elimination game. Look what happened when Derek came out of the game. Andrew Luck came storming back. I think the Raiders being in a second and 18 in that spot where Derek didn't get the ball out quick enough, Donald Penn owned the fact that he got beat on that play, which he really didn't. He slipped on that play. Thought it was impressive that Donald addressed that after the game. You could tell how emotional he was about the quarterback getting hurt. But Derek, that's now in our past, and I think Derek would tell everybody next man up, and that guy is Matt McGloin, who will now be the starting quarterback for the Silver and Black from here on out. And I think Matt McGloin's up for this challenge. All week long, I've been saying on the radio, and we'll get to a portion of that later on in this podcast, that I'm conducting the McGloin train. I believe that he can get the job done here. I believe that Matt McGloin has the ability to step into the spot. I mean, he's supposed to. It's time to break the glass. It's an emergency. Call on the backup, and the backup's got to play well. Matt McGloin is not here just to manage the game. He is there to win games. And I think we all know the elephant in the room here is that if the Raiders can beat the Broncos, they'll get the 2 seed. They'll have 13 days to get McGloin ready for a home playoff game. That's where we stand. The Raiders are already in the playoffs. But the difference in getting a bye week and playing at home as the 2 seed compared to going to Houston and starting a journey on the road for the entire postseason, that's two different stories. So the way I've looked at it all this week is just focus on Denver, a team that the Raiders beat earlier in the year on Sunday Night Football by a score of 30-20, and the Raiders rushed for over 200 yards. And let's not forget the game last year where the Raiders won on December 13th, 15-12. That was the game that Khalil Mack had 5 sacks in that performance. It was incredible. So the Raiders are coming off a win against the Colts, 33-25. The Broncos are eliminated. They lost at Kansas City 33-10. Are they bitter about it? Are they going to play multiple quarterbacks in this game? Like we're hearing being reported, Paxton Lynch will get some reps. Trevor Siemian will get the start. How many starters are not going to play? We won't know until this game kicks off. But it's simple. The Raiders have a better roster. They're 12-3. The Broncos have been eliminated, but it is a rivalry game and a game that the Raiders, I really believe, have to win. I believe that this is the first round of the playoffs for the Silver and Black because there's so much at stake. The 2 seed compared to the 5 seed. So if the Raiders just take care of business, look at the film and the game plan and prep the same way they did for the Broncos, who were playing for a lot more back in the regular season on that Sunday night in Oakland, the Broncos are not playing for what they were playing for earlier in the season. The Raiders got to kick the door in, run the football, get those Pro Bowlers to play at a high level, and hopefully the defense turns it over a few times and Janikowski and Marquette King have a big game here because there's so much at stake in this game, that the Raiders have to get it done. Remember, the Raiders are sixth overall in total offense and fifth in rushing offense. But remember, now teams are eliminated. The Niners are number four. Buffalo was number one. When the playoffs begin, the Raiders will be the number two rushing team in the entire NFL behind the Dallas Cowboys, who are number one. I think they got to find a way to run the ball in this game and dominate, because the Broncos come in ranked 27th in total offense and 28th in rush offense. But when we talk about Denver, we start with defense. They're sixth overall, and they are number one in pass defense. They only give up 187.2 yards a game. And I remember vividly in my notes when we prepared for the podcast against the Broncos in the regular season, I think it was 184 or 186 yards. So the Broncos are the same team when it comes to pass defense. They're elite. They're number one. So what type of situations is Matt McGoin going to be in? You would hope that he would dominate down and distance and only have to make smart plays and protect the football. But this is a big one. It is. For a regular season game, the Broncos fortunately are eliminated, but the Raiders are playing for the postseason. The momentum needs to continue, even though Derek has been lost, and the Raiders need the bye week. They don't desperately need the bye week, but it would be great and would enhance the storyline of this entire season and everything we've talked about on the official Raiders podcast, that this is a best-case scenario year unless you look at the injuries, because the momentum, all the wins, the comebacks, the way the Pro Bowlers were announced, the way everybody's been stepping up and playing big in big spots, do it one more week. Do it one more game and take control of the destiny. And then if we are talking next week about Matt McGloin having a bye week and prepping for a home playoff game, it's going to sound different all throughout the national media and the Bay Area media. But first, you got to take advantage of the spot that the Raiders are in. Put the Broncos down for the year. They're a proud organization. They're still the reigning Super Bowl champs until they play Super Bowl 51. I think they'll play with a chip, especially after the way Kansas City embarrassed them in their last game. It's a pleasure to be joined by the great Phil Simms. And Phil, I want to begin by talking about when you and Jim first felt that Carr's injury was going to be significant. The directors, people coming to you, and you knew that something bad was going on with the quarterback of the Raiders.
Oh, man, when did we know? I think I knew by his facial expression, and then I could read his lips. And then I did Showtime last night. I don't know if you saw it.
I did.
But he says it's broke. It's broke, or whatever. It's broke. He knew it right away. So, unfortunately, I know that situation. And the player, and when you talk about NFL players or professional athletes, for sure, they know their bodies. They know when something is, you know, past that point, it hurts, and when something's really wrong. And, yeah, so, listen, I've done a lot of games in the NFL, and that moment and that crowd and that team and everything, I've never been in a place where it changed so dramatically after just a few seconds. So, and, hey, I'm a fan, and it was really sad to see.
Phil, same with me. I had my 15-year-old son with me, and I've been to countless games, and I saw you play throughout your career, and it's remarkable when a team wins a football game and everyone was leaving the parking lot or going to BART and to try to get out of that parking lot in that situation. You could hear a pin drop, and at that moment, the Raiders really had to look at Matt McGloin and say, next man up. But one more thing on Derek Carr. Where did you have him in regards to his progression this year, the MVP conversation, and what his future looks like after having successful surgery yesterday?
Oh, look, his future is great. Nothing in this surgery or this injury is going to derail anything he does in the future. In the MVP race, you know, I hadn't really thought about it in those terms because there's so much going on. He was having a tremendous year, and like I said during the game, you know, and I even said it about Andrew Luck, is that they're playing for the right coach, the right coordinator, and I really mean the right coordinator, which is so important to any quarterback in the NFL, their career and what they do. And it was all set up, man. He had it, they had it all, the receivers, the run, the offensive line. So a lot to look forward to for him going forward. And look, you know, Derek Carr, sure, his name is going to be right up there with about three or four other guys for the MVP of the NFL.
Phil Sims is our guest. Phil, when you went down at Buffalo and Haas took over, I know you made, you know, you've accounted for the differences and great teammates that you had with the Giants back in the day. The Raiders, with Carr going down, have six Pro Bowl starters there, also the alternates. Any similarity at all? Because I remember when Haas was a third-string quarterback, and was it true that he was thinking about stepping away from the game because he wasn't going to get playing time? Is there any fair comparison to Haas and Matt McGloin?
You know, it's funny. You're bringing up things they brought up to me on Showtime, and I said, it's tough to compare. I said, first off, Jeff Hostetler is a better quarterback than Matt McGloin. And that is not to slight him. I mean, Jeff Hostetler won a Super Bowl and had some good years with the Giants after he left the Giants, you know, out there in Oakland. And overall, I think our team was a more playoff-ready team to go win the Super Bowl than probably the Raiders were. So it's great to compare and say those things, but that year, so the Raiders are having a great year. But we had a tremendous defense. We controlled the clock like nobody else. We had the fewest turnovers in the history of the league at the time. We were the leading scoring team on opening drives in NFL games, and we gave up 0 points on opening drives. So just those numbers alone tells you why we had a good year and why we had a team that was going to be tough in the playoffs. Now, notwithstanding, the Raiders got a lot of tremendous parts, but anytime you lose somebody, and Matt McGloin, I like a lot of things about him. I know a lot about him. I've watched almost every one of his throws in preseason. But in Derek Carr, the gap between Derek Carr and Matt McGloin is definitely bigger than it was for me to Jeff Hostetler, that's for sure.
Phil Sims joins us. Phil, in the Sunday night game where the Raiders beat the Broncos and they controlled the ball for over 40 minutes, 200 yards rushing, it's really simple for us on the outside, and you'll be on the call with Jim and Tracy again, to think that the Raiders just, and Bill Musgrave, follow the exact blueprint and try to run the ball and set up down and distance and some easy throws from McGloin. How easy will that be for the Raiders on the road to Denver?
Well, it's going to be rough, and, you know, I expect it to be rough. I really do. And the Raider defense is going to have to be outstanding. It's good timing by you. I just finished watching the Oakland Raiders offense against that Denver defense, and they did a lot of good things. They kept Derek Carr on the move. They got rid of the football quick. They were chipping Von Miller. They had the extra offensive lineman in there. Donald Penn was he was the star of the game. I mean, he was. I almost want to go see him and say, is that the best run-blocking game you've ever had in your life? Because, man, he was crushing people. So a lot of things went their way. And so Denver didn't have Aqib Talib in the game. They didn't have Kayvon Webster, one of their backup corners, that wasn't there. So nothing is easy when it comes to throwing the football against the Denver Broncos. So to say that we're going to go out there and we're going to give them a couple of easy throws, there's no such thing. They contest every throw. They play so much man-to-man. And they did play some zone against the Raiders. Why? Because the Raiders were running the ball, so they were trying to, like, well, let's protect our corners a little and see if we can get everybody else to attack the line of scrimmage. So it was a tremendous game plan, but it'll be a game plan, especially with Matt McGloin in there, JT, that Denver's going to be ready for this time.
Phil, you're in the middle of your prep for this game, but what are you guessing or what do you assume as a former star player in this league that the Broncos are playing for? That was a tough loss to Kansas City. Kansas City really rubbed it in at the end. They're playing for pride, but also Lynch might come in and play a little quarterback with Trevor Siemian. What is the mindset you believe for the Broncos for this last game of the year?
Man, it's like I can't think of the movie. Jackie Gleason and Paul Newman, Minnesota Fat.
Yes. The Hustler.
Fast and loose, Fat Man. Here we go. I mean, that's what you got to think if you're the Denver Broncos. And you know, yeah, everybody goes, oh, they got nothing to lose. Hey, listen, pride, winning the game, competition, everything. While you're in NFL, it will show for the Denver Broncos. They will not ever, I think, in this game, get out of control or just give up or, Gary Kubiak's not going to lose control of this team. That is not going to happen. And so it's going to be tough for the Oakland Raiders. And the big thing is, remember, it's at Denver. And And look, I've been in those games where we had nothing to play for at the end of the year, and playing against a team that was fighting for a week off of the Houston Oilers back in, I'm going to say 91.
Mm-hmm.
And we beat them, and we were playing terrible. And they were playing for a week off the number two seed, the whole thing. And they came in, they were flat, we beat them. And so you never know. It is the NFL, and I really do expect Denver to be emotionally ready to play the Oakland Raiders because, nothing like spoiling somebody's meal, the dinner, whatever you want to say. I think that's the mindset Denver's going to have.
Wrapping it up with Phil Simms. Phil, when you played the greatest game of your life in the Super Bowl, the completion percentage, what people still talk about today, did you prep any differently for that Super Bowl game than you did with other playoff games against the greatest teams you ever competed against? What was different in your prep for your Super Bowl victory as a starter?
Well, really nothing. I think the difference was that we did play Denver early in the year, so I had some knowledge. And the big thing is we had 2 weeks to get ready. So everything just gets fine-tuned, and I really kind of knew what they were going to do almost in every situation. You know, you get that extra week, and you get these, even back then, you know, the breakdowns. I'm going, oh, if we get in this formation and run this, you know, play action, they're going to cover our guys exactly this way. And it kind of felt really good for us that day, of course. And, you know, and thankfully I was on target. And I used to think, man, it was so easy. And I actually watched the tape of it about 5 years ago. And I go, wow, there were a lot of tight throws. I don't remember them being so tight. And so, but that's what it's like. But it was nothing really. If it would have been 1 week, it had just been another normal week of preparation, because that's just how it is in the NFL.
Finally, on a personal note, your son Chris, who I have as a frequent guest on my show on 95.7 The Game, the Raider flagship, and the work that he does, he is so prepped and opinionated, and he played and had a star college career and played in the NFL. When did you first sense that your son was going to be able to handle this responsibility in the media? He gets better every time I talk to him.
Probably when he was about 4 years old.
Four.
And I'm not exaggerating. He's 4 or 5 years old, and some guy was over at my house, a good friend of mine. He says, oh, my God, you're going to be a radio host one day, because he was already citing numbers from baseball and this and that. And, you know, you can imagine, JT. I mean, I got another son that's still down playing for the Atlanta Falcons. And my family, I have 8 brothers and sisters, and we were all sports people. And so you can imagine what we talked about at dinner every night. And we got together over Christmas holiday. On Christmas Day, I flew in here Christmas morning from out there and everything. And what do you think we talked about almost the whole time we were together? We talked about football, a little bit of basketball, a little bit of college football, but we mostly just talked about pros, and we constantly analyze and talk about it, and it's because we like it. And he really does have a great love of the game, but he has a great love of trying to understand what's going on in the game. And I was afraid he was going to be a coach. And, you know, that's a tough life, and it's a great life, but he tried to get into that business. It's a tough business to get into. Really couldn't break the ranks. So I'm glad he's doing what he's doing. He really enjoys it. So I'm glad he's doing right by you, too. So that's cool.
Yeah, on a final note, on a personal note for me, so in my home, I go into my sports room, and I have a framed jersey of Jim Brown and Fred Biletnikoff and Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, and right there is the Phil Simms jersey. And I tell my kids friends, because one of the reasons why I believe I got in broadcasting into radio is as a fan growing up and watching you play and on that Super Bowl run and what you left for the Giants and then how you conducted yourself on and off the field has had a tremendous impact on my career. So whenever I see you calling a Super Bowl or a big game, or I catch you on Showtime or whatever you're doing, remember, I always have your back, because I love what you do, and I really appreciate the fact that you could recap the injury to Carr, join us here, and I look forward to seeing you down in Houston, as I know you'll be down there at Radio Row for the Super Bowl, right?
Well, I will. We're not going to be doing the game, but we'll definitely get a chance to talk at the Super Bowl and all that. I look forward to it. It's a great honor to hear those words you said about me. You know, when you put my jersey next to my early first thoughts of NFL football, my hero, Jim Brown, and who I've had a chance to interview before and talk to and everything, man, that's pretty cool. Because I remember when I was a kid, Jim Brown would be playing because I was grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. So they were the local team at the time. And, you know, they'd be losing. And I'd be all upset. My dad go, all right, boy, get on out in the yard, just play. And, whatever. We'd go out and play, and he'd yell the scores out. The Browns just scored. Yeah, all right. And so, but great stuff. Great to hear it. And I do look forward to seeing you down.
And here. Thank you, Phil. And we always end on this note. Just give me one quick Al Davis story on Al Davis and your relationship with him when Mr. Davis was alive.
Oh, I got many. I probably have told them to you, so I don't know if I don't want to repeat them, but he made me once write a page on five coaches in the NFL who I thought were going to be who could be good head coaches. So I did, and it kept me up. You know, I didn't want to be doing this on a Friday night after watching the Raiders practice, and I gave him those notes Sunday morning. He read them, and he told Jim Gray, and a couple curse words in there. This is the crap. I already know all this crap. I thought he was going to give me something good. And I really put so much thought and work into all of it. And he just took it and just basically said, this is crap, and threw it in the garbage. So that kind of hurt. But I had like a really cool relationship with Al Davis. And we talked from time to time. And one time we sat beside each other on a flight from New York to L.A., and I swear to you, we did not stop talking for – if we had a 10-second pause, it seemed like an hour. We talked football every second of the whole trip. It was truly great. He quizzed me. I was quizzing him. And, I mean, he was literally like going, okay, if it's a 4-3 – and they do this, and how would you block it or whatever? And I'd say, well, this is how we were drawing up on napkins and everything. It was really cool. It's a time that I will never forget, that trip, that's for sure.
Thanks for sharing, Phil. All the best. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you again down the road. Appreciate it.
JT, thank you. Have a good day.
How good was that? Phil Sims, he'll be on the call with Jim Nance in a pivotal game for the Silver and Black. Hey, I thought we'd have some fun wrapping up this podcast. Last one before we get into the postseason. Last one for 2016. And earlier in the week on the Raider flagship, 95.7 The Game, I said that I would be the conductor on the Matt McGloin train. Here's my Matt McGloin rant as we wrap it up from everyone at Silver and Black Productions. Happy New Year and go Raiders. Let's get going with what will be the focus of this organization going forward. And it will be led by Matt McGloin, a backup quarterback drafted in 2013, who's now played in several games for the Silver and Black, is healthy, is viable, is cocky, is brash, and can make all the plays that he needs to make to lead the Silver and Black into the playoffs and to win playoff games. If you look at the guy who's now the leader at the quarterback position, he wants this opportunity. He didn't want Derek to get hurt, but as a free agent and a guy who's here as a backup quarterback, this is his moment. If he doesn't get this opportunity, he's a career backup the rest of his life. A little bit elevated than holding a clipboard and being in a meeting and running a scout team or being there in practice with the twos. This is the moment for Matt McGloin. Is he ready for it? I believe absolutely. Can he win all the games in front of him? That's the question mark. But mentally and physically, he's ready to go. He's been in every meeting. He knows the playbook. They don't have to give him a new playbook. He can actually do different things that the Raiders haven't been able to do over the last couple of weeks with the injury to Carson Pinky. He can be under center. He can roll right. He can roll left. He can reverse pivot. He can make all the intermediate throws. He can open up the middle of the field to the tight end. He'll get receivers in one-on-one coverage that haven't been in one-on-one coverage for months because of Carr's launch to the MVP of this league, where he's been in the shotgun predominantly and safeties have been back deep. Now, everyone from Wade Phillips to the defensive coordinators ahead are going to stuff the box with eight in the box, and that will open up Cooper and Crabtree and the tight ends in single one-on-one coverage, something that they're not used to. If McLaurin can make the intermediate throws of 8 to 15 yards like he threw to Amari Cooper and like he was able to hit Holmes with, all he has to do is move the chains and get Janikowski in field goal range and get the Raiders in the end zone a few times per game. That's it. There's not nothing more you need. You don't need 350 yards and four touchdowns. You don't need an unbelievable Tom Brady coming in for Bledsoe and launching himself into the Hall of Fame. What you need is for Matt McGloin to embrace this moment, step up, tell everybody he's got it, listen to his coaches, win the game, and move on. That's it. Hundreds of backup quarterbacks in this situation have been able to step up and play quarterback, but only a few, seven, have been able to lead their teams to Super Bowl victories. Is McGloin one of those guys? We'll get to that this week. But for the mindset, Raider Nation, unite. You got a quarterback who can handle this. He's not an outsider. He's not a guy off the scrap heap. He's Matt Bleepin' McGloin. He knows this organization. He knows everyone. And he understands the playbook. And Del Rio and Musgrave believe in him. I believe in Matt McGloin. No, I don't think he's a Pro Bowler. He's not going to the Hall of Fame. But he should be able to manage the Raiders in down and distance, cut down on mistakes, and make the throws that he has to make. Now we look at the opponent in Denver the rest of the week. What does the Silver and Black need to do to win this game? Because my theory is simple, and it's obvious. The Raiders have a shot to do something in the playoffs only if they are the 2 seed. If they secure the battleground and the field as the 2 seed, anything can happen. They'd have to win one home game. They'd be 60 minutes from the Super Bowl. McGloin can handle that, but only if the Raiders win on the road at Denver this weekend. In the last game, in the win against Denver, 30-20, Denver had everything to play for. Reigning Super Bowl champs, Sunday night football in Oakland, and they got boat raced and they got dominated at the line of scrimmage. Carr in that game threw for only 184 yards and no touchdowns, but the Raiders rushed for 218. Latavius, 114 on the ground, 3 touchdowns. Jalen Richard, 8 rushes for 62 yards. And DeAndre Washington, 10 for 35. Janikowski, 3 of 4 from field goal range. In that game, Trevor Siemian, only 18 completions for 2 touchdowns in that game. Denver only ran for 33 yards in that game. They had everything on the line. They're reigning Super Bowl champs. Now they're eliminated. They're eliminated from the postseason. They join the fraternity of teams that have won the Super Bowl and didn't make it to the playoffs next year, the following season. That's the opponent for the Silver and Black as they close out the season on the road. Denver has nothing to play for other than pride. They have a divided locker room, and they just got beat in a game that took all the wind out of their sails. If Matt McGloin can't win that game on the road in Denver, then it's tough to think about him winning at Pittsburgh, let alone winning at Houston, winning the AFC Championship game at New England. Focus. Beat Denver and get that 2 seed. With that 2 seed, football miracles can happen. And let me tell you why. I was there for one of the greatest miracles in NFL history. A former Raider quarterback by the name of Haas, Jeff Hostetler. Oh, you youngsters, you probably never heard of him. And even legends didn't know who he was. Hostetler was a third-round pick in 1984 by the Giants. In 5 seasons, not 1, 2, 3, in 5 seasons, he barely played. He only came in mop-up duty. He was a third-string quarterback, unlike McGloin, second string. The Haas was a third-stringer. He was basically a holder on extra points. He was planning on retiring because he couldn't play anymore and he knew he had something left and Bill Parcells and the Giants wouldn't let him play. But then one of the greatest marches in the history of the NFL happened in 1990. Phil Simms broke his foot in Buffalo and the Giants were 11-3. Sound familiar? 11-3. Haas came in and won 2 games. and then won the first game of the playoffs against the Chicago Bears. And then he found himself playing against the greatest quarterback of all time, a guy by the name of Joe Montana, in the NFC Championship game. Hostetler got hurt in the fourth quarter of that game, limped off the field, came back in that game in the fourth quarter, and led the Giants to two late scoring drives as they beat Roger Craig, Joe Montana, and one of the great teams ever assembled, 15-13, to advance to Super Bowl 25. That's when I come into play. Born and raised a Giant fan, I was there at Super Bowl 25 against the vaunted Jim Kelly Buffalo Bills. And Hostetler was magical in that game. They beat the Bills 20-19 on the wide right field goal. Haas was 20 of 32 for 222 yards and only one touchdown. But the Giants won Super Bowl 25. And Hostetler at that point, before he came in, was Matt Bleepin' McGloin. Maybe worse, because he was going to quit because he couldn't play. And he led the Giants to one of the greatest Super Bowl and most memorable victories of all time. That's part of the backdrop of what McGloin is dealing with. What McGloin is dealing with now is an opportunity to go out and make history. Only seven quarterbacks in the history of this great game have led their teams to the Super Bowl. You might have heard of some of them. The great Roger Staubach in 1971. Terry Bradshaw in 1974. Jim Plunkett in 1980. Hostetler, 1990. Kurt Warner, who was bagging groceries in 99. Trent Dilfer, who went through the silver and black in Oakland. And Tom Bleepin' Brady, when Bledsoe went down in week two. I don't think McGloin is Kurt Warner or Tom Brady, but he can play at a level of Trent Dilfer and Jeff Hostetler. Raider Nation, it's right in front of you. And it's important that everybody rallies around this organization and team. Call it a homerism, call it whatever you want. That's usually from trolls and people who have an agenda. You want to see my Raider paycheck? I'll post it every 2 weeks if you want to call me a homer. I am engulfed in this update and this opportunity for the silver and black. I'm putting my balls on the line. I think the Raiders can do something special. I only had them winning 10 before the start of the year. They delivered 12-3 to the East Bay and the global Raider Nation. I was on the sideline in San Diego when 50,000 were roaring down on Phillip Rivers. Now it's time to get behind Matt McGloin. Have his back. Be a fanatic, not a fair weather fan. Fan is short for fanatic. Let's hear and see the fanatics over the next couple of weeks. Let's rise up. Do something special. Don't throw in the towel like the cowards. Don't kick dirt on the grave of the silver and black. Back the team. They're your team, and they're not done. And I'm driving this McGloin train as far as it'll take me.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.